forgot what day it was. It's Monday. I honestly forgot for a moment what day it was. I know what hour. It's the third hour tonight, and that means Dr. Henry Nyman, PhD, is back with us. We're going to update you on the latest regarding the worldwide issue called the coronavirus pandemic, which has made the United States of America, formerly United States of America, its home. Its new home, home away from home, so to speak, but we're number one. Welcome back, Henry. I've got something to play here in a moment, so let's get a couple comments from you that I'm going to play. A little summary of Trump's virus denial address yesterday, and that nearly hour-long, good Lord, flailing, yeah. That's the word, flailing interview with Chris Wallace.
Yeah, well, be careful because, you know, what day it is was one of the questions on the test that he passed, so he did aced.
Good
so,
note. So, it was one of the last two questions, which he described as being the hardest. You're right. That's funny.
Right.
That's funny.
Right.
All right. Here's a little rundown. It's about 5 minutes long, but CNN, we all know CNN, how they feel about Trump, but these are factual criticisms. So in case you missed it, here you go.
Ignoring the magnitude of the outbreak. And in his Fox News interview this week, it is clear that denial has crossed the threshold to negligence. He can't even be honest about how deadly the virus is here.
When you talk about mortality rates, I think it's the opposite. I think we have one of the lowest mortality rates in the world.
Could you please
get me the mortality rate?
Yeah.
Kaylee's right here. I heard we have one of the lowest, maybe the lowest mortality rate anywhere in the world.
Now, as Chris Wallace noted, it is not. Of the 20 hardest hit countries today, the U.S. is 10th in mortality rate. Bolivia, Colombia, the Philippines, Chile, India, Pakistan, Argentina, all among those doing better than the U.S. But go on.
You have the numbers, please. Number one low mortality rate.
Okay, he's even lying about the lie there because the chart that he decided to use from the European CDC, not his own, still doesn't show the U.S. with the lowest mortality rate.
You look at other countries, they don't even do tests. They don't go around and have massive areas of testing, and we do.
False. Of course other countries test. The difference? Many of the successful ones have a cohesive national strategy. They test, then trace, and their citizens wear masks.
Why on earth would your administration be involved in a campaign at this point to discredit Dr. Fauci, who is the nation's top infectious disease expert?
Because we're not. He's a little bit of an alarmist.
So Trump denies that his administration is attacking Anthony Fauci before he goes right on ahead there and undermines Anthony Fauci. The attacks are real, and they're right out there. They are verifiable. The top trade advisor wrote an op-ed. The social media director pushed a cartoon out on social media, and the White House anonymously pushed out a list of opposition research on Dr. Fauci.
Many of those cases are young people that would heal in a day. They have the sniffles.
All right, I've interviewed young people who survived weeks on a ventilator. I've interviewed young people who are still battling symptoms months later. They're the so-called long haulers. And next hour right here, we're going to be talking with a mother who lost her 20-year-old son and 23-year-old daughter in a span of 11 days. So give us a break. This isn't just the sniffles. And then this interview moved on to other topics like the military.
We got soldiers, the biggest pay raises in the history of our military.
No, he actually did not. While a pay raise is always welcome, the military got bigger ones in 2008, 2009, and 2010. Next.
We won two world wars, beautiful world wars that were vicious and horrible.
Vicious and horrible, yes. Beautiful, no. War is hell. And he knew that well enough to get 5 draft deferments and make sure that he never saw war. Millions and millions of people were killed in those world wars. Then Trump responded here to the Pentagon possibly considering changing the names of bases named after Confederate generals.
Military says they're for
this. Excuse me. I don't care what the military says. I'm supposed to make the decision.
Now, the military, trying to do its part to ensure a cohesive environment for servicemen and women, blocked by the commander-in-chief, who is hailing American traitors. And then he said this.
Can you give a direct answer? You will accept the election?
I have to see. Look, I have to see.
That is a president there undermining the institution of American democracy. Next, President Trump talked about Joe Biden.
Agreed, it says nothing about defunding the
police. Oh, really? It says abolish. It says defund. Let's go.
All right.
Give me the charter, please.
All right.
Okay, it didn't say abolish. It did not say abolish. It does not say defund. Next.
Religion will be gone. Okay. Life, you could forget about that. The whole question of life.
When you say life, you mean abortion.
Absolutely.
You say religion is going to be gone. What does that mean?
Look at what they're doing to the churches. They won't let the churches even open if they want to stand in a field 6 feet apart.
All right, so who is they? Well, at the state level, there are officials from both parties who are putting limits on large gatherings, not to ban religion, but to save lives. But go on.
We've had churches that wanted to stand in fields 6 feet apart. There has never been an administration that's done so much as I have, from tax cuts to regulation cuts to rebuilding the military to getting choice for the vets. Nobody's done the things I've done.
Actually, they have, because it was President Obama actually who signed the Veterans Choice Program into law in 2014, not President Trump. That was nearly 3 years before President Trump moved into the Oval Office.
I think mail-in voting is going to rig the election. I really do.
All right, that's just false. There is zero evidence of widespread fraud. Studies also show mail-in voting has not benefited one party over the other. Also, the president, along with many of his advisors, have voted by mail for years. Then, as the president tries to make mental acuity an issue in this election, he brags about the cognitive test that he took.
The first few questions are easy, but I'll bet you couldn't even answer the last five questions. I'll bet you couldn't. They get very hard.
Okay, so the last questions on that test. What day is it, and what city are you in?
You answer the question.
Let Biden sit through an interview like this. He'll be on the ground crying for mommy. He'll say, mommy, mommy, please take me home.
Okay, there you go. There's a little summary of just some of the lowlights of the nearly one-hour interview.
Yeah, the interview was quite remarkable. For the pandemic part, you could have played pretty much the whole thing, and it would be pretty similar to what you just played with the highlights. It was a remarkable display of a lack of the most basic understanding of the pandemic, of testing. I mean, his latest is that he wants to withhold testing funds. So he doesn't want to do testing. He doesn't want to do anything. I think there was money for tracking, for running tests. And his main idea is, you know, the less you test, the less virus there is, which is nonsense. And that really kind of highlights his point of view. It really isn't what the virus is doing. It really has nothing to do with the reality. It just has to do with his presentation of reality. So throughout the interview, he was essentially trying to talk down the virus. He couldn't really talk about what he did. He couldn't really talk about how the virus was spreading. This weekend was the worst weekend on record. Last week was the worst week on record. And this week will probably beat last week. The numbers are going up in Europe. They're basically going back to school. They're reducing the restrictions. People are eating in restaurants. They report a handful of cases. They do tracking of the cases and quarantine to keep the numbers down to near baseline. We did 60,000. We did 63,000 on Saturday, 60,000 yesterday, and 60,000 today. So, and during the week, we were doing 75,000, and this week we'll get back to 75, 80,000, approaching Fauci's prediction that we were going to get to 100,000. The numbers are going up. They're running out of beds. They're running out of doctors. They're running out of medications. They're running out of testing supplies. The backup is like a week with the national lab, so they essentially make the test useless by the time you get the results. You pass through most or all of the incubation period. You can't do contact tracing because you don't know if the test is positive or negative. And by the time you find out, it's too late. You know, it's been a week to 10 days between the time the person started showing symptoms.
Right.
And they're infectious for 1 to 3 days before they show symptoms. So it's been 10 to 14 days before you get the results from the time the person was most infectious. So contact tracing 2 weeks after the fact is useless. It's too late to tell that person to quarantine. They've already infected whoever they're going to infect because they've already been through the incubation period and have a high viral load before they even knew they were positive, you know, before they were even symptomatic. Mm-hmm. His lack of understanding, I mean, he does the same thing about predicting the virus was going to disappear. I mean, if you recall, first he talked about the low numbers, then he said that, you know, it's going to be like a miracle and April is going to disappear as soon as it gets to be a little bit hot. So the state that's got the highest percentage of positives is Arizona. It's the middle of July. Arizona is above 100 degrees. I think it was approaching 120 degrees for a few of the days. So it's as hot as it's going to get, or pretty close to it in Arizona. Their numbers haven't gone out, gone down. They're shipping patients to adjacent states because they don't have any space in Arizona. All their ICU beds are full. They're getting vans to hold the bodies. Refrigerated trucks are parked in the parking lot to handle the bodies because the morgues are full. And he didn't really address address the pandemic at all. He said, well, you know, there's embers and there's flames in a few areas. There's some flames now, but we'll get a handle on it. And there's nothing saying that we're getting a handle on it. Things are going up. They're getting closer and closer to the start of school, especially in the southern states where the numbers are the highest. There's no way you can have classes when you have record numbers of cases where you don't have any space in the hospital for the patients. And then you're going to send students to school and they're going to basically infect each other and they're going to bring the virus home. And even if they don't get sick enough to take up a space in an ICU bed, they're going to come home and infect their parents and grandparents, and they're going to fill up the hospitals, but the hospitals are already full. So they're going to overwhelm the healthcare delivery. And they don't have PPEs. There's PPE shortages. All the shortages that were present, maybe not the ventilators, but everything but that were short in the spring are short again. There's no national policy. He's going and leaving everything to the states and for the states to kind of fend for themselves, and him kind of throw in here or there. He's not really building up stockpiles. He was going to do that over the summer. He thought that the cases were going to go down. They've done just the opposite. The cases have gone up. They've gone up in the summer, where it's hottest, and that's where he said
kind of unprecedented,
the virus is going to disappear.
Yeah.
And
I don't remember another one that's done this.
Other one?
I don't remember many flus that have done this in the heat of summer.
Yeah, well, this isn't
like
a flu. It's just not a flu.
I mean,
it's
viruses in general. Yeah, got
but,
it.
But the main difference is, and it was part of his stick on the virus going away. He said, well, I didn't say when it was going to go away, which is not true. But in any event, he said, well, eventually it'll go away. But it's not even clear that's going to happen, because he doesn't know the difference between an epidemic and a pandemic. Mm-hmm. An epidemic is somewhat limited. It's only present in a given area, and it doesn't spread beyond that area because the virus hasn't really achieved the ability to spread that efficiently. So it's somewhat limited. A pandemic has achieved that. It's basically gone throughout the world. It's everywhere in the world. And as a result, if there's any seasonal effects from weather or from whether you're inside or outside, you're going to have some people in the world that are experiencing winter when the opposite hemisphere is experiencing summer. So the weather is really not going to have a factor. The virus is present all the time. At this stage, the virus is present at high levels. And when you get a virus at this level in a human population, it's pretty well established. And even if the population starts to develop immunity, then the virus will mutate or recombine and evolve away from the immunity. It's kind of like saying, well, the flu is going to go away. The flu doesn't go away. The flu is a seasonal component. So it goes down in the summer and up in the winter. And that's in part how well the virus replicates. And it's basically selected. The one that affects humans replicates more quickly in colder weather. Mm-hmm. So
Henry,
it grows quicker in the winter.
What's going on? I have heard nothing in weeks about Italy, Milan. What's happening in Italy, in northern Italy, where that Italian strain really rocked everything?
Italy got it under control. They did a lockdown. They kept the lockdown significantly longer than the U.S. did. The numbers went down, and they got the virus under control. There's a little bit of concern about some starting to pop up now that they've taken the restrictions off, so they're monitoring and they're basically doing, quarantining the positives and identifying who they are. But there's very little in Italy. I read you the last week. I can pull it up again, but European countries are not up at the top anymore. European countries used to be the top areas, and they basically had the strain that was in Italy. That the Italian lineage continues to expand. There's like three different versions of it. They all have the same change in the spike protein, but one has that primarily, one has an additional mutation in one of the other genes, and another one has a mutation in a different one. So they divide it up into three. But when you add the three up, they're like 10 times higher than the other three lineages that are out there. And the other three lineages, this is just looking at what's been deposited at GSAD, and a lot of those were deposited at the very beginning. They're overrepresented because they were dominant, back when, in January and February. In January, the Italian lineage didn't even exist, and so the Italian lineage started to make its appearance in February and gain, and now it's it's dominant everywhere. So the Italian lineage that was in northern Italy is now all over the world, and it's all over the U.S., and that's the reason there are these outbreaks in the South. The South didn't have it initially. The Italian lineage hit hardest in New York. That's when it was clear that it was taking over, because as soon as they started releasing the sequences, of the cases in New York, over 90% of them were the Italian lineage. So it was clear that the virus had come from Italy. It hadn't been tested in the U.S. because all the testing required that the person with symptoms had come from either Wuhan, or then it got expanded to somewhere in China. But if you weren't from China, you basically didn't get tested. So all the cases that came from Italy and Europe just silently spread because they didn't meet the criteria. The criteria was you had to have traveled to the U.S. and had to have had exposures in Wuhan or China. So it was a limited amount of testing. Part of that was because we didn't have enough test kits. So testing has always been a problem. I had said back then that we were essentially flying blind because we didn't have enough test kits and we weren't doing enough testing.
That's right.
And Trump wants to go back to that. He wants to. I mean, the whole concept of opening up the schools is that you have those tests available and you can get a baseline on who's infected, not based on symptoms, because most people don't have all three of the symptoms. They only have some of the symptoms, and the only one they really test for is fever, and you can be spreading the virus and be asymptomatic, not have any symptoms, or you can have a cough without a fever, or you can have breathing difficulties. Well, usually you'll have something with it, but there's no real effective way to screen unless you test. And if you're going to open up the schools and you're going to have all these people to test, all these students and teachers and maintenance workers to test, you need the test, and you need the answer. You can't take the test and send it off and find out
a week later
whether you're positive or not, and have all these kids in school for a week. And that's why it's just going to be a disaster. Some schools are going to try to have in-class learning, and some of the ones that are going to try it are going to be in these areas that they're crazy. They're going to be in the South. They're going to have a high level of virus all over the place, and they're going to put people inside buildings, in classrooms, and even if they have the density half of what they normally have, they're still going to have too many people there. To get the students to wear masks all day is going to be a challenge, especially
that's
if you're
not going to be easy
in elementary school. And then they're going to try doing sports. I mean, I don't think they'll even make it to that. I don't think they're going to get past the preseason practices. The preseason practices alone, they got these kids out on the field, getting in shape for football, and you got the band marching around, and both of those are, even though they're outside, they're still somewhat close contacts, and there's going to be virus floating all over the place, and these places that already have virus at a relatively high level, it's just going to go into students, and they're going to if they can test them, they're going to realize that it's not going to work. And if they can't test them, then it might take a little longer to figure out if it's going to work. But it'll actually hit even harder. And then the numbers will start going up because they'll bring the virus home to their families. And then, it's virtually impossible if you have somebody living in the house to have them separated enough so that they don't transmit to the other people. Right.
No.
No matter what you do, if they got the virus and it's in the house, sooner or later you're going to get infected, and the whole family's going to get infected, or most of the family's going to get infected. And so it's and Trump hasn't addressed any of that. What he's addressed is he's gonna start having conferences again. Yeah, he's gonna have updates on a daily basis. And you saw how well that went last time. And so it's not clear who's going to be at that, how much of the presentation is going to be scientific, and how much of it's going to be Trump talking and thinking that he's convincing the virus to go away or convincing his listeners that the virus doesn't exist, or that the only reason the numbers are high is because we're testing too much. And these are all just absurd. I mean, the numbers are high because the virus is high, and the high virus isn't just producing a lot of cases. It's producing a high percentage of tested people coming back positive, and it's producing, you know, people going to the hospital and people going to the ICUs, and the death toll starting to increase again. And yeah, it is looking like the deaths might be down a little bit because of the existing treatments, that if they don't run out, they got dexamethasone and they're running low on now with the antiviral.
Remdesivir,
yeah. The remdesivir, they theoretically have enough for the U.S. They're not letting anybody else have it, so that's not creating a whole lot of goodwill. The production's been boosted up, but it's still not quite keeping up with the number of
things. People in states or areas, counties, that have to wear face masks, face coverings. I have a pretty interesting story up last night about N95s being really the only effective mask. You can't do it with a bandana or a scarf. You can't. All right. So I'm seeing now more and more people just wearing the clear plastic face shields. And that's enough to get them into any store. That's a face covering. It's just that face shield. So, I mean, that does absolutely nothing. If you sneeze or cough, the air is just going to go sideways. Any infected air is going to come in sideways or underneath. I don't know. The whole thing is odd, those face masks. They're fine on top of a face mask. The face plates, the plastic plates.
Right, the shields, right. Yeah, I mean, the problem is there aren't enough N95s, and that was the problem from day one. I mean, that was the problem. You know, I mentioned it last week, but, you know, I got a call from Oregon from somebody who was
an emergency
room physician.
Did he ever call you back?
No. I mean, I wasn't all, you know, that helpful. I said, yeah, you should have a 95 mask. He said, well, we don't have them. Yeah, they say we don't need them. And I said, well, yeah. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go along with that. And so that was part of the reason they said initially that they didn't know that the general public needed the mask, because they thought that it would give a false sense of security, that if they didn't have N95s, they wouldn't be that efficient, and then people would wear that mask and think they could go and do anything, and the mask wouldn't be, you know, that useful, especially for protecting the person wearing them. They might be somewhat useful for preventing the spread, and they kind of did the calculation and decided that, you know, it really wasn't worth it initially. Then they kind of realized that the countries in Europe and Asia seem to be getting the virus under control more effectively, and that the mask would work. And even if it didn't go to 100% and didn't guarantee you weren't getting infected, that would limit the spread of the virus, because it would keep, you know, when you're talking or when you're coughing, the amount of virus that would go out at a distance would be reduced quite a bit, because a fair amount of the virus would be in droplets, and the droplets would get impeded by the mask, and so if you coughed, it would not as much would go out. So it would help reduce the spread of the virus, although it wouldn't help the person using it. And the problem right. was that they didn't want to recommend the mask and have a run on the N95 because there was a shortage of N95, and they were trying to hold on to those for the healthcare workers, which had a greater need than the general public because the healthcare workers were being exposed constantly to the virus. And they didn't want to say, you know, everybody should get a mask. And if you get a mask, you should really get an N95 because there weren't enough N95s for the general public. Right.
No.
And they would hoard it. So that's why they said you can wear the scarves, even though the scarves, or you know, a bandana, even though they're not going to be as effective as a mask, and they're not going to be as effective as an N95 mask. And so there's still a shortage. And that's part of the reason. I mean, the U.S. is number one for a reason. It's not because the virus started here. It's not because
No, I found a wonderful vacation spot, and it had a thoroughly good time.
There's no real program here. There's no coordinated effort. It's patchwork. They're going there. I mean, some states are going and dividing it up by county. They're saying, well, these counties don't need to wear a mask, and these do. Well, the people in the counties where you don't need the mask, you know, basically go to other counties where there's more virus and there's free flow of travel, especially now. I mean, the lockdowns have been eased up almost everywhere, so you can go almost everywhere. And there's still, you know, activities where people think, well, you know, we're not supposed to do X, Y, or Z, but we can go and have parties in our home and nobody's going to know, and da-da-da-da-da, and they end up spreading it that way. And teenagers think they're invincible and they aren't going to get that sick even if they get infected, and they end up infecting others around them, and they, you know, provide the virus with an opportunity to generate reservoirs at various locations, and then it kind of spreads out from there. And so there's no real program. There's a shortage of everything. There's the states are kind of fending for themselves, and kind of if they say nice things about Donald, they might get some deliveries, and he's always threatening one thing or the other. Now he's threatening the school, saying that if they don't open, he's not going to give them funding. So he does everything backward. You know, it's basically, you need more tests. He wants to cut funding and do less testing when you got the virus. He doesn't understand that you need to do contact tracing to get an idea of what's going on, but you need to you basically need to have not only the test kits but the ability to get the results from the test kits.
Mm-hmm.
And there's technically a lot of research labs around the world that could run these tests, and if there was funding for it and the reagents were available, you could help take the load off that way. There's a lot of things that could be done. You could go to the national labs, and just like you're saying, you know, start generating the vaccines, even though you don't know whether this one's going to be the one that's going to give the best results, so that there isn't a lag waiting for the vaccines, and we'll fund that. Well, they could do the same thing to the national labs and tell them, you know, we'll guarantee that if you expand and buy some additional machines so that you can increase the capacity, we'll pay for that, so it won't be a major outlay. And it won't be that when things calm down, you'll have all these extra machines you don't need. We're going to pay for the machines. And you can, you know, double your ability to run the test if you're just running if you have more machines. And there are ways to do these things, especially 6 months down the road, and nothing's really happened. That's why when they're going to have these sessions each day to give an update, I'm not sure what they're going to say. They'll probably just lie, or they'll cherry pick data and say, "Well, this looks like it's kind of flattening." And
what other choices do they have? You got it. There's no other option. Right. They can't.
Well, they can do something tangible. They can increase the funding for the testing. They could do more tests. They could cut down the time.
Yeah, he could order N95 production like it's a war.
He's
not doing it. Just not doing it.
And that's the whole point, that you can draw up the list of all the things he didn't do and all the things that he did wrong. And it's really not hard to figure out why we have more cases and why the numbers are going up. And why it's heading to a level that's going to be out of control.
Henry, we're also facing almost indescribably biblical numbers of bankruptcies. I'm not talking about small business here. Today, the world's number one manufacturer of small gasoline engines, Briggs & Stratton, bankrupt, gone. And there are going to be many more. The damage to this country is off the charts. No one's talking much about it. And it's coming home.
And as long as you have this level of virus, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. You're
correct.
Not going to get the economy back in gear when you have people that are afraid to go back to work, when they're... You know, the ones that can work from home is one thing, but there's other ones that basically the restaurants, you're crazy to go to a restaurant now. I mean, it's just not a safe thing to do. Even if you have a mask, it's not a good idea.
No, you got to take it off to eat.
Right. And they're not 100%. Number one, most people don't have N95s. So although, you've got something that's going to reduce the spread of the virus, it's not going to eliminate the virus. You still have to worry about, who's preparing the food in the kitchen and who's carrying the food out
correct.
To your table.
Sure.
And, there's all kinds of ways that
and
you're
who those
have
people
exposure.
Saw before they went to work and who they're going to see
right,
afterwards.
Right,
you
right.
Just, you have a clue.
And what's their living conditions like and who are they exposed to at home? And so the bottom line is you have to get the virus under control. Trump got tired of the pandemic. He went and, I don't know what he's doing. He's spending most of the time just watching TV and tweeting, I think. But the bottom line is that the virus is kind of on its own. It's spreading. The people are just assuming that they can do more. They're doing more. I mean, I see the traffic here in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's kind of getting a resurgence now. Most of the activity in Pennsylvania was in eastern Pennsylvania. Pittsburgh didn't really get hit that hard. And now the numbers are starting to go up, and you can just see how many cars are on the road. The people are out and about, and they're wearing masks. They're not going into stores without masks. All the stores are requiring it. But there's a lot more cars on the road. There's a lot more people moving about. It's getting ready to the start of school. I mean, the high school here, they got signs up all over. You should wear a mask and you should maintain, 6 feet distance. But, the football team's out there practicing. The soccer team's out there practicing. They are outside, but, there's a lot of people on the field. And I don't think they're going to get to the beginning of the school year. I think that they're going to have a month's worth of practicing and getting ready for school. And by then, there'll be enough people that are symptomatic that as soon as they start school, they're going to realize that, they got X number of people that have the virus and are infected, and the number you know, they keep tabs on those things. They report the positives, and the map's very, you know, fine-tuned. I mean, the neighborhoods are divided up, and they update the map every day. You can see how many people in your neighborhood, you know, got sick in the last day.
Let me read this before we run out of time. This is interesting. I've got it up. It's actually the top story in headlines. How can a disease with a 1% mortality rate shut down the entire country? Right? And just let me read this. It's not very long. There are two problems with this question. One, it neglects the law of large numbers. And it assumes that one of two things happen. You die or you're 100% fine. So we've got a population of 328 million here, okay? If 1% of the population dies, 1% case fatality rate, that's 3,282,000 dead. 3 million right. dead would monkey wrench the economy no matter what. That more than doubles the number of annual deaths in this country all at once. The second bid is people keep talking about deaths, deaths, deaths. Only 1% die. Just 1%. One is a small number. No big deal, right? Well, what about the people who survive the virus? This is according to the story now, and it seems to be credible. For every one person who dies, 19 more require hospitalization. 18 of those will have permanent heart damage for the rest of their lives. 10 will have permanent lung damage. 3 will have strokes. 2 will have neurological damage that leads to chronic weakness and loss of coordination. 2 will have neurological damage that leads to loss of cognitive function. So now all of a sudden that, but it's only 1%, becomes 3,282,000 dead, 62,358,000 hospitalized, 59 million with permanent heart damage, 32,800,000 with permanent lung damage, 9,800,000 with strokes, 6,500,000 with muscle weakness, 6,500,000 with loss of cognitive function. That's the thing that folks who keep going on about only 1% dead, what's the big deal, don't get. The choice is right. not to ruin the economy to save 1%. If we reopen the economy, it will be destroyed anyway. The U.S. economy cannot survive everybody getting COVID-19. All right? And the guy writes...
Trump is saying, you know... It's just a sniffle and people get over it. Yeah, even younger people basically can get these, you know, they basically survive, but they end up with these debilitating diseases. They end up being in the hospital for a week or two, and then they don't bounce right back when they get out of the hospital. They have to go to recovery. It's too much rolling the dice. Yeah, you know, the virus can do too many different things that don't necessarily result in a fatality, but they result in you know, significant damage. And it's widespread, and the numbers, if it gets at a certain level, it'll start taking off exponentially, and that there'll be too many people to test, there'll be too many people to put in the hospital. There'll be too many people that need follow-up care because they've got this, you know, they need rehabilitation. The health care is not set up to handle these types of dramatic increases, especially if they keep going on and on and on. And so, you know, the idea is to get the virus under control and kind of have it so that you can manage it like they're doing in Europe and like they're doing in Asia. And then you can start rebuilding the economy and start getting, returning, still won't be normal. It's not going to be normal until there's enough immunity. And so people have less severe if they do get infected because they've got some immunity and it might not keep them from, it might turn it more into a flu-like situation than a pandemic with a novel coronavirus that hasn't really been circulating in humans before. And this polybasic fever site is going to cause continuous problems because it allows the virus to infect too many different cell types. And that's why you have all these other diseases that might not result in death, but they still result in hospitalizations and they still produce damage that it's going to take some time to return to normal if it returns to normal at all. I mean, some of these things, it's just too new to know how bad these effects are. And it's the same thing with the children. You've got these children that have these rashes and they've got something from a hyped up cytokine storm because they were infected. But there are other ones that are going to be in between. It's going to be a whole spectrum of effects. And some people might not get the rash, but they still might have damage. They've got examples of asymptomatic children that have damage to their lungs. I mean, I mentioned this last week, they had that in Guangdong province at the very beginning. They had one of the children of the families who was asymptomatic, and their parents insisted that they be tested because everybody else in the family was infected. And they had an abnormal CT scan. They could see damage to the lungs, even though the child was asymptomatic. And so the idea that you're going to go and have, these elementary school students under 18, Trump said something about, in the state of New Jersey, there was only one under 18 that had serious problems. I'm sure that was nonsense to begin with. But the bottom line is that you have all these children that have these cytokine storm-induced rashes and other problems that didn't result in hospitalization, but they still resulted in problems. And if they have, lung damage so that they end up with COPD or something when they're 25 or something along those lines, they're going to create a drain on the healthcare system for decades. And it's kind of like he's just rolling the dice, trying to figure out what he can do for the next couple of months to get reelected, which is nothing really, but he's going to try. And he's basically not looking at the long-term consequences. He has no idea what the consequences are. Nobody really does. And if people did have an idea, they told him, he wouldn't believe them. Or if he believed them, he wouldn't care. He'd lie about it anyway. So it's not a good situation. The numbers are getting worse. And people are just shaking their heads. They're looking at the United States and they're just pitying them. They won't let people, them come in. You can throw your passport away. It doesn't take you anywhere. You can use it for ID, I guess. But,
I know. All right. So, we'll see what happens. Thanks for the update, as always. Yeah. There's nothing.
Well, the prediction is we'll set new records this week. It's not much of a prediction. No. It's pretty much a guarantee.
It's really whatever America was 6-7 months ago. It's just worn out. People are just beaten down now. This is unlike anything they've ever had to go through. So it's tough for a lot of people. Especially the 45 million out of work, the 20 to 30 million who haven't been able to pay rent, who are going to lose their homes and be out in the streets, for God's sakes. I mean, these things are huge, and no one seems to be addressing them. All right. Thanks, Henry. Talk to you tomorrow.
Okay. Talk to you. Take care.
All right. All right, and thanks to all of you for being here, wherever you are around the world, and I know in some of your countries you're having issues. It's a bad thing, and it's a real virus. Don't let anyone kid you. Don't make any mistakes. Use common sense. Selenium, zinc, Allicin C, colloidal silver, and vitamin D. Take those things, and you should be as well armed as you can to withstand infection. Be back tomorrow. Take care.